Okay, we are on Green Left Radio. Stuart, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Oh, yeah, good. So I'll just introduce Stuart Monckton. Stuart Monckton is the international editor at Green Left Weekly, the magazine, the newspaper this program is affiliated with, and we're going to be talking about the US election. So, Stuart, what is your initial thoughts on Donald Trump?
Well, I think like most of the world, the results were extremely shocking. Not simply a shock, although I think it was a shock to large numbers of people, but absolutely shocking that things in the United States have reached a stage, really the sort of flagship capitalist country, the world's only superpower, I think, has quite clearly reached a point of degeneration where a figure like Donald Trump can actually win the presidency. And I think a lot of people are still grappling with that fact.
Yeah. I guess I've been kind of like, you know, reading discussions, you know, I'm sure all of us have, because if you go into a news feed and you're a politically minded person, there's like an article on Trump every 5 seconds or every minute. But basically some of the key debates that have been occurring on the left is whether the Trump victory was an anti-establishment vote, and what is the class composition of the voters of Donald Trump? Because there's been a common kind of liberal response has been, oh yes, all the people that voted for Trump are, you know, uneducated sort of hillbillies, which is very like classist kind of language, but. I actually, you know, in terms of what I've, the analysis, the data that we have, that the picture is much more complex than that. And what is sort of your opinions on that, Stuart?
Well, obviously, I mean, everyone's trying to take in what happened and how this happened. I don't think you want to get into a false dichotomy between it being a question of an anti-establishment vote or a vote for bigotry and for racism, because these things don't necessarily have to be counterposed. The far right has always represented a certain anti-establishment vote, and has always included economic grievances. The exact dimension of both, you know, I think it's going to take a while to. There's going to be a lot of debates about it. It's going to take a while to actually figure that out. But actually, in some ways, the bigger question isn't actually exactly who voted for Donald Trump. The far bigger question, if you look at the statistics, is who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Those two things aren't the same in a situation with voluntary voting. And in fact, the statistics show that actually the reason that Donald Trump is in the White House is not a rise in the Republican vote, although no doubt there is a certain shift in key states from Democrats to Republicans, or people who didn't vote Democrat but more voted Republican. But overall, I mean, it's been widely commented on that Donald Trump actually lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton. And in fact, his vote was lower than Mitt Romney's in 2012, and quite a bit lower, actually, than John McCain's vote in 2008. However, what happened was a precipitous collapse of the Democrat vote by about 9 million from 2008 and about 5 million or to 6 million from 2012. So that's actually the question. The question wasn't a huge surge in voting for Trump. It's concerning that nearly 60 million people vote, about 60 million people vote for someone as bigoted as Donald Trump. And you can discuss how much that was. Yeah, he's appealing to economic grievances and being an outsider versus race. But actually the big question is, how is it possible that the Democrats could not even defeat and mobilise people to defeat a candidate as widely hated as Donald Trump? Obviously, his supporters love him, but you probably haven't had a more hated Republican candidate. The answer is also you probably haven't had a more hated Democrat candidate either. And I think that's the real story, particularly for the left. That has to be the story. The fact that the Democrats and Hillary Clinton in particular, as a personification of the establishment, as a personification of the political class responsible for policies making people's lives a misery, was unable to convince anything like the numbers of people to vote for her that would need to defeat Trump, which isn't the same as the people not voting for her supporting Trump. It's the fact that they were not willing to vote. We're not willing to vote for Hillary Clinton. I think that's the big story, and it shows that people have no faith in establishment politics. I think that's really the takeaway. And for the left looking at how to move forward in the United States, and those of us trying to look lessons, it's sort of that's more interesting thing than necessarily the fact that the Republican vote stayed more or less the same. So, you know, the exact reason people might have voted Trump is one factor, but the decisive one is where were the millions of people not willing to vote, who weren't willing to vote for the Democrats? Because I think they'll also be decisive going forward in terms of resisting Trump's agenda.
Yeah. I think, Zane, do you have a comment?
Yeah, one of the... I've sort of been having some discussions, sometimes heated with people on social media about the election result. What does it all mean? One of the charts that's been going around, both in the lead-up to the election and based on exit polls, is the really striking racial dimension to the vote, insofar as a massive proportion of black people voted for Clinton and did not vote for Trump, and very high numbers, not quite as pronounced as the black vote, but something like 2/3 of Latino and Asian voters voted Democratic instead of Republican. So... And then another aspect is the someone I was talking to said, well, now that Barack Obama is not the candidate, the number of black people voting has would have dropped. How significant do you think that is? Because to me, it's an odd dynamic. Heaps of black people didn't vote for Trump and did vote for Clinton. So,
That's absolutely true. It was like 88% voted of black people who voted voted for Clinton. Then again, that's down from a bit over 90% for Obama. So actually, there has actually been a slight shift in that sense. Not a big shift. I don't think it's probably the election, but there is a small drop in people in black people who voting Democrat, which again To have that when the candidate is Donald Trump, the most openly racist candidate, probably since Barry Goldwater, whose rallies were that virtually, KKK hate rallies in some cases. But a lot of the time he didn't always talk about race. He talked about trade, he talked about economics, all the rest of it. But there was a strong racist element, and everyone could see it. Black people were attacked and threatened at his rallies. That really really condemns Hillary Clinton. But there's another story there as well, which is all of the black people and other minorities, the very poor people who didn't vote. And I think there's two elements to that. One is the fact that they clearly do not feel motivated to vote Democrat, combined with, and we sort of have to talk about this, the extent to which the United States, I think those who think, the US is fucked if everyone supports Trump. I mean, the fact that it's simply not very democratic. And that's not just in the big sense that it's largely a corporate oligarchy and they own the politicians, they own the political process. Even on paper, it's not that democratic. The fact that Trump could lose a popular vote and win the presidency, and the fact that you have a situation where there's been, in particularly in southern states, a huge effort to disenroll and deny the votes of black people. And it was the first election in 50 years where the Voter Right Act in key places, in a lot of places, didn't apply, been struck down in court. This is an astonishing situation. It was the key win of the key wins of the civil rights struggle 50 years ago, and it was struck down. And you had a situation where there were hundreds of less polling booths. That's not even considering the fact that, if you're in prison or you've been a prisoner, you can't vote, which applies to millions of black people, particularly black men. And the irony, of course, is that that was Clintonite Democrats as responsible for that as anyone. And they actually disenfranchised a whole section of the people that, Clintonite Democrats don't represent, may not be in their interest, but Trump is even less in their interest. So I think those are kind of key factors there.
Yeah, I guess an interesting comment, because, you know, going back to that really silly Slavoj Žižek comment before the election, he basically argued he would vote for Donald Trump because this basically, it's a kind of argument of accelerationism, which is basically an argument that, you know, the radical left or left-wing politics or social movements will grow in a moment of deep crisis. And if you vote for the candidate that will give the most, the biggest crisis point, then suddenly the radicalism will arise. But
it's got to get worse before it gets better.
I mean, there are cases in history where that has been the case, but I guess one thing to consider in the case of the United States is, you know, the United States isn't actually undergoing a right-wing shift. I don't know that it is, like, you know, Donald Trump actually does single right-wing shift, but there is actually a very lots of strong growing social movements. I mean, under Obama in the last 8 years, which is one of those presidents that you think the populace would be most compliant to, because there's still a lot of progressive illusions in the Obama administration. You had the Occupy movement, you had the 50 Now campaign, which is still growing, which is a campaign for the minimum wage, 50. You also had the election of a socialist alternative councillor, who's been doing a lot of fantastic work, and she is currently calling for mobilizations against Donald Trump. And then you also have Black Lives Matter, another important sort of trade. You'd have the Keystone Pipeline movement, and then you have all this stuff that's happening in Standing Rock, and of course then the Bernie Sanders phenomena, which is you can single that there is a shift to the left, and I think it's kind of and what does kind of like Donald Trump mean for these social movements?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's quite clearly that there's dissatisfaction in the US, and it's finding expression. I mean, these social movements remain relatively, you know, in their early stages, but probably the most decisive indication of a desire for change was, and the potential for that to take a left-wing thing was actually the Bernie Sanders political insurgency in the Democrat Party that the Democrats crushed. And we, of course, it's been widely commented on that Bernie Sanders' polls were much better than, against Donald Trump, were much better than Hillary Clinton's, and they always were. And while it remains that you can say anything is certain after all the polls didn't play out very well on the day anyway, I think it's safe to assume that Bernie Sanders' sort of socialist-leaning message, his sort of pro-pink class, anti-corporate message, you know, calling for a political revolution against the billionaire class. Certainly, that kind of campaign certainly couldn't have done worse against Trump than Clinton's campaign did, and certainly would have had a far better chance, particularly in some of the states that went Republican, that were the swing states with a lot of rural poor people. Definitely would have had a far better chance. That's not to say it's guaranteed, because if you look at things like The other fact that it can't be told is the fact the Democrat machine might have sabotaged Sanders' campaign. The corporate media may have sabotaged Sanders' campaign, much the same way that you see is happening to Jeremy Corbyn in what seems like a deliberate bid to make him unelectable. They say he's unelectable, and they seem to be going out of the way to make it a reality. So you've got that factor. But nonetheless, the fact that, you know, in the primaries, more than 12 million people willing to vote for a candidate who talked about socialism and political revolution against the billionaire class does show that they're, you know, people are angry, and they're willing to do it. And you've already seen I think it's quite heartening to see just how quickly, straight away, you've seen demonstrations break out against Trump. And I think that's really where it's not even just the question that he's going to control Congress and he's going to control all the other stuff. It's also, even if the Democrats are in there, the Democrats have shown that they can't resist Trump. They can't do it. It's actually going to be on the streets and then those things that you talk about, those social movements, the people fighting pipelines, the people at Standing Rock, the Black Lives Matter movements, and all those movements that have been cohering in the last few years, as initial as they are, that's really where hope is going to lie. Those who think that's inevitably strengthened by having Donald Trump in don't know much about history. I don't think they know much about history at all. I don't think they understand what creates strong social movements and where radicalizations come from, because it was simply the worst possible leader and the most right-wing things that are anti-people and the worst repression, which is going to worsen probably under Donald Trump. Then you'd see the poorest country and the most dictatorial countries would be the ones always in revolt. But that's not how it happens. And the biggest social movements in the United States broke out and won a whole series of events post-World War II, when the economic prosperity was at the highest it's ever been. Because when things start to change in people's favour, they begin to ask broader questions and they begin to wonder whether or not other things can change. What's the point in being guaranteed a job, young people felt in the 1960s, if they were then went off to Vietnam, or the job was just for some corporation that hates humanity. They were willing to ask those sort of questions when their parents weren't, because their parents had to fight for a job. So it's not just the case, because other times, things getting worse can spark radicalizations as well. It depends on how strong people feel. And in that sense, what will actually, a sense that fighting back can win is the most decisive thing, not how bad a president is.
Yeah. Okay, so we're running a bit low on time now. So do you have any sort of concluding thoughts, Zane and Stuart?
I'll just conclude by saying it's obvious the system has no future. A system in which Donald Trump could even be the candidate for one of the two major parties is not a system with much of a future. And the fact that it can win, it's quite obvious that the system is no longer functioning, no longer working, and therefore the answer really, and it's quite clear that the Democrats cannot represent that and do not represent that. They've failed, and their politics have failed decisively. So it does really come down to a combination of ordinary people who will be the victims of Trump, just like they were the victims of both Democrat and Republican administrations in the past. Trump will be worse. And those victims organising the fight back in social movements, and then out of that building a political alternative of the sort that you saw Sanders inspire, the sort that Jill Stein tried to inspire, and her vote was about three times higher. It was about 1.2 million people. That's really where the alternative lies.
Yep. All right. Thanks for that, Stuart. It's been a very good discussion.
Yeah, cheers.
Sure.
Stuart Monckton there, international editor of Green Left Weekly.